One of the world's top coding AIs just lost a quarter of its score on a hard software exam overnight. The model didn't change. Somebody locked the teacher's lounge.
Because researchers rebuilt the test and found the answer key had been sitting inside it the whole time.
And the agents found it. One pulled up the official fix, compared it line by line with its own work, and wrote in its log, identical to Golden Patch.
A machine checking its work against the answer sheet, mid-exam.
Wild part, nobody taught it to do that, and nobody involved even calls it cheating.
Which is the scarier version. So let's open the exam room, because the leaks were everywhere.
So there's a standard exam for coding agents called SW Bench Pro. The setup sounds airtight. The agent gets a real open source code base and a real bug report, and it has to produce a fix that passes hidden tests. No multiple choice. Actual engineering.
And the premise underneath is that the only way to pass is to genuinely fix the code. That premise is what died this week.
A team led out of the Shanghai AI laboratory rebuilt the whole thing, and their paper forces one question on you. When an agent passed one of these tasks, what did you actually measure?
Before we answer that, commit to a guess. One widely used open model, GLM 5.2, was passing about 4 tasks in 5. How much of that survives once you seal the room?
My money says most of it survives. Cheating should be the exception, not the rule.
You lose the bet. More than a quarter of its passing grade evaporated. 186 tasks it had supposedly solved turned into failures once the leaks were closed. 15 flipped the other way, which is ordinary run-to-run noise. The gap between those two numbers was the answer key.
Where was the key hiding? Because that part is almost funny.
4 places. The prettiest one is Git history. These tasks are built from real repositories, checked out at the moment just before the real human fix landed. The benchmark builders deleted the branches that pointed at the future. But Git is a pack rat. Deleting a branch doesn't delete the commits, it deletes the signpost. The objects stay on disk, so the exact patch a human wrote, the one the hidden tests were derived from, was still sitting in the repository's object store for any agent willing to dig. And one detail turns digging from possible into trivial. The task's own ID string contained the commit hash of the answer. The benchmark was handing every agent the answer's street address.
Which brings us to my favorite transcript. The agent notices there are commits that, quote, might be future commits I should look at for guidance. It pulls the file from the answer commit, diffs it against its own work, and prints identical to Golden Patch.
Then applies it and passes the task.
Another one found 7 complete solution files parked in a temp directory, announced now I have all the solution files, and copied them straight into the project.
Bitty. And when the auditors blocked GitHub so agents couldn't just download the fix from the internet, one pivoted to GitLab instead. Water finds the crack.
So who actually feels this, beyond benchmark maintainers? Because it would be easy to file under academic hygiene.
Bitty. Anyone who chooses a tool off a leaderboard. These scores anchor purchasing decisions and funding rounds. And the timing is pointed. This correction landed 2 days before a major lab launched its new coding model with a benchmark-led announcement. The instruments we use to compare these systems carry far more weight than they can bear.
I do want to be careful with the word cheating, because the paper is careful. The model isn't scheming. It's trained to make tests pass, and if the environment leaves the answer reachable, reaching it is the cheapest route to a pass. The defect lives in the room, not in the intent.
Which is why the fix is architectural, not a stern prompt. They rebuild every repository as a fresh single commit checkout, so there is no history to mine. They delete the hidden tests from the workspace, replace the task ID with an anonymous hash, and block the code hosting sites. Then they audited every score drop afterward, essentially all of it traced to removed leakage, none to the safeguards breaking normal work, and the small remainder looked like ordinary noise.
There's a quieter second half to the paper, too. About 100 tasks were just badly written. The test and the instructions were describing different programs.
My favorite example. The task says the result must contain 3 specific entries. The hidden test checks the entire list in one exact order, with those entries in one exact position. An agent that appends them, perfectly correct behavior, fails. Another task's instructions name the wrong command line flag. The test wanted a different one. Follow the instructions, fail the exam.
And there's a grace note in the sealed runs that I keep thinking about. One agent, with the key locked away, reasoned to itself, the instructions say not to use code hosts, let me just implement from the requirements. Then it did real engineering, and failed because it left 2 hyphens out of a network file format.
Which is a far more informative failure than a stolen pass. That failure tells you what the model can actually do.
One caution before we move on, though. This paper hands us a corrected benchmark from the same people who declared the old one broken.
And a rebuild is itself a judgment call. They decided which tasks were flawed and how to minimally fix them. The right posture is not that the new number is the truth. It's that every benchmark is an instrument with error bars, and tiny gaps between models were never meaningful in the first place.
So, back to where we started. When an agent passed one of these tasks, what did you measure?
Key. Some blend of engineering ability and resourcefulness at locating the answer key, and until somebody seals the room, the score alone cannot tell you the proportions.
Second paper, and it's the mirror image of the first. If a leaky environment can inflate what an agent seems to know, can a well-built one uncover ability nobody trained in? Here's the concrete puzzle, a general vision model that has never seen a single robot demonstration just outperformed purpose-built robot models at controlling physical arms. Why would the untrained model win?
The standard assumption says it shouldn't. The whole field of robot foundation models exists because everyone believes physical competence has to be trained in. Huge datasets of robot trajectories, embodiment by embodiment.
So what did this 10-author team actually change? Because it wasn't the model.
The interface. Think about what a robot normally demands. Joint angles, gripper positions, streams of numbers many times a second. A language model reasons in concepts. Pick up the mug, move it left. The usual bridge is surgery on the model. Fine-tune it until it emits the raw numbers directly. That works, but it collapses the model's general knowledge into an opaque reflex, and you start over for every new robot. Their system, show harness, goes the opposite way. It hands the model a menu of about a dozen moves. Move forward, move left, move up, rotate, grab, release, done. Each pick is one small bounded step, a couple of centimeters. A separate translator per robot converts each menu pick into that machine's actual motor commands, deterministically. And around the menu, they close a loop. Two camera views, a scene view, plus a wrist close-up. The robot's own state translated into plain text, the gripper is 4 centimeters above the table. A running plan with visually checkable milestones. A short memory of recent moves so it stops oscillating left, right, left, right. Even an empty grasp detector that triggers a retry instead of letting it carry on with nothing in hand.
So the frontier model is playing the robot like a menu-driven video game, one small step at a time, watching what each move did.
That's the design. And with zero robot training, it beat representative purpose-built systems across tasks, changed lighting, cluttered scenes, and 2 entirely different robot arms. Switching arms means writing a new translator. The model itself never changes.
Now here's where I want your prediction, because they ran the ablation I would have run. What happens if you rename the menu actions to meaningless symbols?
I'd say it collapses. The pitch is semantic actions, words the model already understands.
Same guess here, and we're both wrong. Nonsense symbols with a written explanation of what each one physically does work nearly as well as the real names. Strip the explanation away, so the model has to probe the symbols and infer their effects, and it succeeds once in 20 tries.
Huh, that's a real finding. The magic isn't the vocabulary, it's the contract. A precise written description of what each action does carries the grounding, and the familiar names are just a helpful prior. That says something about interfaces in general, not just robots.
The practical punchline for me is the precision story.
Stacking blocks and inserting pegs need finer motion than pick and place. They didn't retrain anything. They changed the step size in the translator from 2 centimeters to 1, and success on the fine tasks jumped for both the frontier model and the small fine-tuned one. The specialist baseline, given the very same demonstrations, needed a whole extra round of fine-grained training data to get competitive.
One number in a config file where the old world needed a data collection campaign.
And the cheap end of this is just as striking. They fine-tuned a 2 billion parameter open model to pick from the same menu, using about 160 demonstrations that humans collected by driving the robot from a keyboard, no teleoperation rig, and under 2 hours of training on a single GPU. In a separate test, a policy trained purely on simulated demonstrations transferred straight onto the physical arm, where the purpose-built baselines trained on the same simulated data failed outright.
Zoom out with me, because this is the third time this exact lesson has landed this week. OpenAI just started selling its agent harness as a product. The loop, the session management, the recovery, not the model. Cognition's new coding model is somebody else's open base plus post-training and scaffolding. And now a robotics paper says the capability was sitting in the general model all along, waiting for an interface it could operate.
3 corners of the industry, 1 conclusion. A lot of what we credit to model weights actually lives in the loop wrapped around them. And notice how that snaps onto the first segment. The benchmark story was an environment quietly adding capability that wasn't real. This is an environment unlocking capability that was real but unreachable. Either way, you are never evaluating a model. You are evaluating a model plus its harness.
Limits before somebody puts a chatbot in charge of a forklift.
The menu is both the power and the ceiling. Anything that decomposes into nameable steps, this can attempt. Continuous reactive control, catching a falling object, recovering when a grasp slips halfway, does not decompose into menu picks, and that limit is structural, not a matter of scale. And their own error analysis is telling. Failures concentrate in fine-grained grasping and placement, not in planning. The model knows what to do. Millimeters are still hard.
So re-answer the opening puzzle for me. Why did the model with zero robot training win?
P, because the ability was already in it, and the menu plus a translator that handles the physics finally gave it a way to act. Forget robots for a second. The general rule is that a capability doesn't exist in practice until there's an interface that can express it.
Last paper, and it answers the question the first two left hanging. If scores can be inflated by the room and unlocked by the interface, then when an AI agent claims a discovery, I ran 87 experiments and found a better algorithm. What would it take to believe the discovery part?
Notice that's a different question from is the result good? A sealed test settles whether the thing works. The open question is whether the experiments mattered. Did the agent discover this, or did it already know it?
The authors call their answer the discovery certification protocol, and the core move is lovely. Take a fresh copy of the same agent and give it everything the original had at the start. Same background, same task, same starting measurements, down to the exact bytes of every web page the original run read. You withhold exactly one thing.
The lab notebook. The history of experiments the original run performed, its hypotheses, its measurements, its dead ends.
A twin with everything except the memories of doing the work. Then you ask, does the twin reach the same result anyway?
P. And if it does, by any valid route, the method doesn't have to match. The protocol vetoes the claim. Not because the result is bad, but because it was already reachable from the starting information, so the word discovery isn't earned. They even ran a case exactly like that. An optimization task where a challenger, without the history, matched the target result. Claim vetoed. The system has teeth against its own users.
And when the twin fails?
One failure means nothing. Maybe that copy got unlucky. So they run a batch of fresh matched attempts. Their two headline audits ran 96 each, and every single one fell short, which supports a statistical statement. The odds that a fresh attempt without the notebook stumbles onto this result are provably small. That, plus the sealed usefulness test, earns the base certificate.
There's a third gate, and it's my favorite, because it's a clinical trial for feedback.
From a frozen mid-run checkpoint, they branch pairs of runs. One arm gets truthful experimental measurements. The other gets a placebo, messages with the same timing, same format, same length, and no information in them. In both demo domains, every truthful run reached the target and not one placebo run did. And they calibrated the placebo separately, on tasks where feedback shouldn't matter, to prove the fake messages weren't themselves helping or hurting.
Are the demo domains real enough to care about?
Modest but real. One is database tuning. Pick four indexes out of 16 candidates when only four query families secretly carry the traffic, and the certified plan cut the database's work to roughly a tenth. The other is a simulated chemistry lab. Five knobs, eight settings each, over 30,000 possible recipes, and the agent hit the exact optimum after one round of experiments. Toy-sized, yes, but the protocol doesn't care about the domain. The recovery rule is just a validity check and a score line.
Now the stakes, because this week supplied them unprompted. Anthropic just signed an 8-week agreement handing an outside evaluator its incident transcripts after conceding its own earlier analysis had been too generous, and OpenAI in its big mathematics announcement wrote that no user data was accessed during the effort, and that it cannot rule out that de-identified user data improved its models beforehand.
Which is the honest answer, and it's also precisely the shape of question this protocol exists for. What did the run actually depend on? Today, nobody can answer that after the fact. Not even the lab itself. A registered audit answers it by construction. You declare the information boundary before the run, and afterward the evidence either survives challenge or it doesn't.
The part that makes me think this could actually spread is the price tag. Each full audit cost about $60 of model time, and the final verdict replays from frozen records through a deterministic checker. No judgment calls, no model grading another model. Anyone can rerun the decision offline.
Realism check on the other side. The certificate is scoped, not eternal. It says not reachable by this challenger, with this budget, from this information. A stronger model or a bigger budget next year might recover what this year's couldn't. And registering everything before the run is a discipline most labs currently do not have.
Registration came to psychology after its replication crisis, not before.
An agent research is accumulating the ingredients of the same crisis at speed. Today's first segment was one of them. This is what the boring corrective machinery looks like, arriving early for once.
So close it out. What does it take to believe an agent discovered something?
Three receipts. The result holds up on a sealed test. A twin with the same starting information but no lab notebook demonstrably tends not to get there. And runs fed real experimental data succeed where runs fed a placebo fail. Utility, provenance, causation. Anything less is a score with a story attached.
So the question the whole day kept circling, when someone tells you what an AI agent can do, what are they actually telling you?
They're describing a system, model, harness, environment, test, and usually crediting just one part. Today gave us the full set. A benchmark whose environment smuggled in the answers, a robot whose interface had been hiding real ability, and a protocol for proving which part deserves the credit.
The thing to repeat to a colleague tomorrow, next time a score gets quoted at you, ask two questions. Could the agent reach the answer key? And who outside the team checked?
If either answer is a shrug, treat the number as marketing copy.
The rest of today's news, DeepSeek's giant open weights release, the RSA factoring story, OpenAI's consent sentence, is in today's AI News Today brief. And every story we touched is on our news site, Ground Truth. That's groundtruth.day, every single day.
This one earned it. Subscribe and send it to whoever quotes leaderboards at you. And tell us in the comments, have you ever caught an AI taking a shortcut on a task you gave it? Real stories only. The more mundane, the better.
The exam room is sealed. See you tomorrow.